RotoWire's Derek Van Riper joins us to talk about his waiver wire targets for week 7 between buys, between injuries. Some of you could be in a tricky situation. So Derek's here to help us out. Hello, sir. How's it going?
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Very well.
Doing pretty good. And the millionaire maker, Kenny Britt, 1.7% owned in DraftKings, and he had a big game, 67 yards in every single game, but one this season, 4 catches in every single game. He's just widely available. Can you start to trust this guy as a wide receiver 3, a flex option, just as a, maybe a buy-in replacement?
I think he can. I mean, with the bye weeks being here, especially, and injuries kind of picking apart the quality of the depth available on most teams and waiver wires right now, it makes some sense. And the Lions are susceptible to allowing ridiculous performances. The target share, though, with respect to how often the Rams throw it, is actually pretty high for Kenny Britt. The Rams don't have a lot of quality alternatives. You know, Lance Kendricks at tight end, he scored yesterday, but it's not anything to write home about. Tavon Austin's not typically a high-volume player. I do look at him as exactly what you described, a wide receiver 3 flex option with the bye weeks, almost better in non-PPR than in PPR, though, because he's only had 2 games through 6 weeks with at least 8 targets.
What about Golden Tate? 8 of 10 this week, 165 yards,
finally
1 touchdown.
Up.
Against the Rams.
Yes.
Against the Rams. But they've actually been okay so far this season. He's only owned in 68.3% of leagues. For me, that was a little bit low, and that was the ESPN numbers. Do you think that's exactly where he should be, or are you surprised that his ownership is so low?
I think it speaks to a lot of leagues having just like 10 teams, maybe even 8 in some cases, because in leagues like that, it made sense to let him go based on the way he was being utilized. Now, the talent's always been there. We saw the volume a year ago, and I was surprised at how hard he crashed. So if he's available, he's definitely worth picking up. I have to wonder how much of his surge this week is tied to Theo Riddick not being on the field. Riddick, of course, a pretty steady pass catcher out of the backfield for the Lions. I just think maybe the game plan adjustment was to get Gold and Tate more involved. Still looked like he had pretty good speed yesterday, too. That was the good sign, because in terms of his efficiency this year, it just had not been there prior to yesterday, and that he was able to make some big plays was really encouraging.
Yeah, good call on Riddick. That makes a lot of sense, actually. If you didn't, you know, cut ties with Tate and you still had him, is this an opportunity maybe you would just sell higher? Do you think that finally now we've seen a game from him and we can maybe see a couple more?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's kind of a forced hold, at least in most of my leagues, where I don't know if anyone's really excited to go get him, but you can feel a lot better about having to throw him in there, kind of like Kenny Britt, as your wide receiver 3 flex option if the bye weeks and injuries are kind of picking apart your roster.
J.H.I. was 5th yesterday in terms of touches, tied for 5th with 26, and Adam Gase had said he was going to just use one running back, but it was Damian Williams who found the end zone, but it was J.H.I. who really had the game, and Arian Foster really didn't do all that much and didn't get on the football field. What do you expect from J.H.I. in this whole situation in Miami? I mean, Foster also, he just seems so hard to trust. If he's going to get back on the field, doesn't it really seem like he could just stay on the field?
I thought if Foster was active, he would be the starter, just based on the way they handled their running back situation throughout training camp, the preseason, at the very beginning of the season before Foster got hurt. Only 3 carries for Arian Foster, though, yesterday. I mean, Ajayi going over 200 yards against Pittsburgh, one of the biggest surprises of the season, really, because this is a game where the game flow seemingly would have put Miami behind. Ajayi doesn't catch a lot of passes. You wonder about his relationship with Adam Gase. Clearly, things have been patched up in recent weeks. I mean, 13 carries and a score in week 5 as well. So he's freely available in like 80% of my leagues right now, and I imagine people are going to spend half or more of their remaining fab budget to get him, because running back is just that thin right now.
Would you spend more than half to get this guy?
I will in the Stopa Law Firm League. I don't have an RB2 that I trust in that league. So if I'm in a spot where I went 0 running back and it just hasn't worked out, I absolutely would spend the bulk of my remaining fab to get him, because at this point in the year, I'm just not sure why you'd want to save that cash anyway.
Right.
I got the worst tweet I've ever gotten in my life the other day. Someone asking me who to start. Like, you could go Arian Foster, you go Justin Forsett. And like, you just quit fantasy football. Like, if this is what it's come down to.
It's rough, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like, that's a tough, I don't trust Arian Foster at all.
No,
you can't.
It's hard to.
Do you trust Mike Gillislee, though? I mean, he's behind McCoy over in Buffalo, 6 rushes for 60 yards and a touchdown versus San Francisco, who's been very weak against the run this year. Where do you see him fitting for the rest of the season in that offense?
look at Gillislee as just a solid handcuff right now. I mean, I don't know if week in and week out, if you're going to get enough reliable carries. Even yesterday, six really isn't enough where you want to throw him in the flex, but he was very efficient. He showed good burst. He found the end zone, and he clearly is the backup to LeSean McCoy in an offense that looks like it has a really good offensive line. That the Bills give Tyrod Taylor a lot of time to throw. They open up quality holes for McCoy to run through. So if something were to happen to McCoy, and we had that brief scare yesterday where he appeared to suffer a knee injury, Mike Gillislee just appears to be a very high upside backup, a handcuff for McCoy owners, or a possible handcuff to steal, if you will, if you want to stash him away otherwise. Because I think if he were to end up getting a couple starts at some point this year, we might view him as a top 12 or top 15 running back based on the way that offense is built without Sammy Watkins. They just don't have a steady passing game to speak of.
And they have Miami next, too.
Yeah, and if anything happens, I mean, to McCoy, I mean, we saw him go down a little with the knee injury, and I'm sure owners were a little bit scared, and Bills fans as well. Just rank these handcuffs. I mean, would you rather him over Booker, Henry, or D'Angelo Williams?
Wow. Those are the four guys that you want to have at least one of them, just in case one of them hits. I think I like Williams a bit more than Bell, assuming that Ben Roethlisberger doesn't have a longer-term absence with the meniscus surgery, because we've seen what Williams can do, and Pittsburgh's offense with Roethlisberger is one of the most explosive, if not the most explosive, offenses in the league. I think Booker versus Gillislee is a coin flip. I think the reason I like Booker more than Gillislee right now, though, would be that C.J. Anderson has struggled in recent weeks, whereas Shady McCoy has looked good, and I realize Anderson had some production called back on penalties, which aren't really his fault at all, but at the same time, I wonder how much the coaching staff is considering that when evaluating the position. So I think Gillislee probably comes in last on that list, but still good enough to be rostered over some of the handcuffs that are stashed away out there.
Derek, one more before we get you out of here. Dwayne Allen was a big sleeper for a lot of people. It was just a big body for Andrew Luck, and he went down yesterday. Just another ankle injury. He's been bothered by that for a couple seasons now. Jack Doyle, a touchdown yesterday. He's got three on the year. Is this somebody that people could pick up? Maybe they had Jordan Reed, who's dealing with his sixth concussion in his football career, and just a lot of mediocre tight ends out there in football. Would you trust this guy to start him? Maybe it's matchup dependent.
Yeah, I mean, without Dwayne Allen in the fold, if we find out that Allen's not going to play this week, I like Jack Doyle more than, say, Vernon Davis, even though Vernon Davis also scored in that game for Washington yesterday. Allen leaving with that ankle injury really opened things up for Doyle. We've always wanted the Colts to just lean on one tight end. It goes back to the Fleener-Allen duo from previous years. The Colts haven't been able to get much from Philip Dorsett. He got hurt last night, too. It's basically T.Y. Hilton and the field, and Doyle's the kind of player that, in the red zone especially, he can start to clean up with more targets. As long as Dante Moncrief remains on the shelf. I mean, 4 for 53 and a TD last night, very encouraging on four targets, and it seems like Andrew Luck is very comfortable throwing the ball in his direction.
Yeah, there's a 15% red zone share that Dwayne Allen leaves open and up for grabs.
Yeah.
I want to ask you quickly, just before we go, we were talking about Antonio Brown's value, you know, that Big Ben's gone, and all of his statistics just essentially cut in half. 10 touchdowns with Big Ben, 0 touchdowns without him. What do you do? Do you hold on to him, or are you looking to potentially shop him around?
I wonder if you have to trade him for players at a different position. Like, I don't know if the challenge trade works with a player like Brown, whose value just takes at least a short-term hit, right? Even if he's not a top three receiver anymore, if he's down at top eight, top 10 range, you have to try to exploit that. If you can get more value than a top eight or top 10 receiver via trade, you want to do that just to make your roster better and to get some of that uncertainty out of your lineup week in and week out. I think he's going to be a difficult player to move, though, right now, until we get more details regarding the duration of Roethlisberger's absence. Because if it turns out to be the shorter window where Landry Jones starts in week 7, the bye happens in week 8, and then Ben Roethlisberger's back in week 9, I think the buy market for Antonio Brown is going to be like really favorable. So moving him in a trade could be significantly profitable. Whereas if Landry Jones has to start 4 or 5 games or something along those lines, that makes things a lot harder as far as Antonio Brown owners trying to find someone who's really interested in paying up for his services.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're talking about flipping him, acquiring him. May not be a bad idea.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Derek. We appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks, guys. I'm going to try to get that Savage Garden song out of my head now. So thanks for that.
See you later.
No problem. Yeah, we'll try to get that out of our heads as well.
I want it in my head. I like that song.
Yeah.
It's a good song.
We got it now. It's I Want You.
I Want You.
I Want You.
Which one?
Like Chicka Cherry Cola.
Chicka Cherry Cola.
Yeah. We'll be back.
Sorry.
Hopefully. See you soon.
Welcome back inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. As promised, Blake Murphy from Raptors Republic joins us now. And it's honestly blasphemy, Blake. This is the first time we've talked fantasy basketball all year, basically, since the season ended.
Yeah, I mean, the season's just starting, so I guess now's the time.
Now is the time.
We're maybe a little behind the ball.
We're a little behind the eight ball, so we're going to catch you up right away, and we're going to jump right in. We're going to start with the Yahoo guard rankings. And leading the way, Steph Curry, Russ, James Harden, point guard James Harden, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler, John Wall, Kyrie, Kyle, and Clay rounding out the top 10. And we're going to start with Steph Curry. Of course, depending on where you look, him and Russell Westbrook, they flipped the 1 and 2 rankings. But for me, when I look at Golden State, there are so many mouths to feed. How can you, for me, it's almost like, how can you have him so high? Like, one, to me, is out of reach.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Steph Curry as the number one option. I would have Russell Westbrook number one myself. Points guard James Harden is obviously going to be a guy who's going to get a lot of counting stats. Westbrook, in particular, if you play in a league that's eight cat and dozen count turnovers against you, that's an extra boost for him. But Steph Curry, I don't think there's a ton to worry about. You look at the potential minutes. He played, 32 minutes 2 years ago, and he was still the number two ranked fantasy option. He played 34 minutes last year, and he was number one. So maybe the touches come down a little bit, but then you're just looking at assists and maybe even efficiency going up. So I think Steph will be fine, just not at number one.
I was going to say, do you think his role now turns into more of a traditional point guard, and maybe even there's rumbling that Klay leads the team in scoring this season?
Yeah, I don't think Klay Thompson is going to lead the team in scoring necessarily. You're still looking at a hierarchy where Steph Curry and Kevin Durant are two of maybe the best three players in basketball. So, you know, Klay Thompson is going to get a ton of easy open looks, and he might lead the league in three-pointers this year. But leading the team in scoring, I'm not sure. It's Curry's team, and Durant is, Kevin Durant, maybe the second best player in the world.
You get the first overall pick. Do you go Russell Westbrook? Because for me, he has 29 triple-doubles over the last 2 years. The next person that's closer to him is Draymond Green with 14.
Yeah, I like Russell Westbrook as the number one pick. I'm a huge Russ guy, and I'm really excited to see him just go full John Wick on the NBA after Kevin Durant's left. The turnovers are maybe a concern, and then the field goal percentage isn't always elite, but he is going to do so much from a scoring perspective, from an assist perspective. He's going to fill it across the board, and he get you steals too. There's really not a lot that Russell Westbrook isn't going to do this year.
Someone whose ADP ranges, depending on where you look, John Wall, he's quite interesting. He not only had one surgery, he had two surgeries, different procedures on either knee throughout the season. His hope is that when he comes back, he's going to be more explosive like he was at the beginning of his career. But his coach is saying, Scott Brooks, we're not going to rush him back. So first of all, you might be looking at missed time at the beginning of the season if you draft him high. Second of all, you don't know. Knee injuries, we've seen Derrick Rose. You know what I mean? Derrick Rose is literally the caution sign for knee injuries. So what do you think about John Wall this season?
I think a lot of it's going to come down to your personal risk preference. If you're okay taking a bit of a gamble in the mid to late second round, John Wall's a guy who, he's going to average close to 10 assists, if not over 10 assists. And the scoring's there. And if Bradley Beal's healthy at the same time, which is an enormous if for both of them, obviously. But the offense could be pretty good with those two working together. But again, it comes down to your risk preference. If you're someone who has an appetite for that risk and you want to take them late in the second, you can probably justify it. But if you're someone who's not and you're in a league of people who also aren't risk seeking, you might be able to get John Wall far later than his historical value would suggest.
Imagine fourth round John Wall, jump all over it. Let's talk about some of the forwards that you want to jump all over as we look at the top 10 rankings. KD, the second best player in the league according to Blake Murphy, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, Paul George, Giannis, Draymond Green, Paul Millsap, LaMarcus Aldridge, rounded out by Melo. We're going to start with Kawhi Leonard. Every time I say his name, I want to just be like, Kawhi Leonard. Tim Duncan lists Spurs, old Tony Parker Spurs, older Manu Ginobili Spurs. What kind of step can he take this year? He's been so amazing and gotten better and better each season. Do you expect him to kind of progress even further this year?
I don't know if he actually takes a statistical leap forward. Last year, he averaged 21, 7, and 3, something in that neighborhood. The steals are great. He gets some blocks from as far as small forwards go, and then he's pretty efficient in terms of percentages. So, Kawhi is kind of already functioning as a top-level guy, as a guy who's a bubble first-round pick. I don't know how much higher that goes because that's not necessarily how the Spurs like to operate.
Yeah.
But, look, he's the guy there now. It's his team now, and, as Parker and Ginobili continue to step back, there might be a few more touches for him, but there's also LaMarcus Aldridge to feed, and they added Pau Gasol, too, so it's not like, we're not talking 4 or 5 extra shots a game.
No, and the Spurs, you can never really be sure what Popovich is going to do. He's one of the, he's like Bill Belichick. You kind of just can't even try and get inside his head because you'll drive yourself crazy.
Maybe it's Kyle Anderson's team now.
Well, LeBron James, the Cavs are still his team, but it's interesting because we're used to him being said a number one pick overall for so many years. Now, people are thinking maybe like late first round, mid to late first round, just because he's going to be rested a bit more, and we've seen a bit of a regression in terms of his playing time, over the last few years.
Yeah, we definitely haven't seen a regression in terms of LeBron's play.
Sorry,
as we
I misspoke.
Look, there's a risk sometimes that you can overthink these kind of things. With a guy like LeBron, who has been at this level for so long, he's definitely still a first-round pick. But if you want to talk about the resting, yeah, the last 2 years he ranked 9th and 12th in overall value because he played 76 and 69 games. And last year, you know, if you play in a head-to-head format, he missed 2 games in March and 2 games in April. So as you're, you know, going down the stretch, he was sitting out a little bit. And the Cavs are not going to focus on anything but the playoffs. So they're not going to be in a position where, you know, where they're playing with anything on the line. So moderate risk late in the year, but otherwise it's LeBron James.
Are there any other forwards that we had on that board that you think could probably project higher than their ADP?
Yeah, Paul Millsap is a guy who every year I don't really understand why people aren't more high on him. The last two seasons he finished 15th and 10th in overall value. Now his ADP is 18th. And on top of that, Al Horford's gone. And while they replace him with Dwight Howard, you know, those offensive touches, it's probably going to run a little bit more through Millsap. You know, Jeff Teague's gone and Dennis Schroeder's going to get a lot of that action too. But Paul Millsap is kind of the guy on offense now. And he's played at a bubble first round value the last 2 years and people aren't drafting him like that. This guy's really, really good.
Do you think he's underrated similar to Jonas Valanciunas, or do you think Jonas Valanciunas deserves what, like, his reputation?
I think Valanciunas, any optimism, and I've been asked about him a few times as the Raptors gear up, any optimism, whereas with Millsap, he has performed at that level. Here, Valanciunas, you're projecting where he's going to go. The big thing with Valanciunas is so far through a couple of preseason games, the Raptors are having him work with the second unit a lot more, which is really encouraging because you look at a team that has Lowry and DeRozan, Valanciunas is the third option. If he's propping up the second unit a little bit more, that's a good way to get him a higher usage.
Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. Everyone loves playing fantasy football or fantasy leagues of any kind, but no one wants to be bothered with the headaches of getting everyone to register, getting a draft time that suits everyone's needs, maybe collecting payment if it's a money league, but someone's got to do it. Yeah. And this is where the commissioners come into play. And that's why Reginald James, host of the Fantasy Commissioner on Rabble TV, is here to join us now to talk about that aspect of fantasy that's often quite overlooked. Hi, sir. How are you?
I am great. How you doing, Ashley? Hey, Chris.
Hey,
good to be here.
We're doing good. Thanks for jumping on. I was a big fan of Heroes. Loved your work there. You can give them a follow at Twitter, at Commisso as well, as you see another Twitter handle on the bottom there. But we just want to talk to you about what you've started here, the show. Why did you decide to do this? And tell us what it's all about.
Because I started the Fantasy Commissioner Show because commissioners, they need love too.
They
want to enjoy the season as well. And they can't do that if they're dealing with crazy nonsense and drama and trying to mediate between two knuckleheads, you know, who are having a turf war on the message board. They can't do that. So I started the show to help them out, especially the new commissioners. Because there's a core of people who they play fantasy because it's the social thing to do. Everyone else is doing it. But there's the rest of us who we love football. And fantasy football is an extension of that. So we want everyone to enjoy the game. I want to help new commissioners especially prevent problems, prepare for problems, and deal with issues that would otherwise take away from their enjoyment of the game. Because I remember when we used to get the scores from USA Today and write them on the yellow legal pad. You remember those days, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're old enough to remember those days for sure.
Exactly. You know, we're dating ourselves. Because the scores, now the scores pop on and someone, you know, they score 6 points. And then the scores
are real time. Yeah.
The points are gone, you know. But back in the day, they didn't become official until Tuesday. So I remember those days. So I want people who are starting out to start off on a good foot so they can enjoy themselves. And that's the whole idea of the show. I just want to help, and I enjoy doing it.
So Reginald, what's one of the most common problems that you faced in your experience as a commissioner?
I get a lot of questions about commissioners who want to prevent trades from happening.
Yes.
Now we know what collusion is.
Okay. Yep.
Well, there's a lot of forms of it, but there are oftentimes where a commissioner wants to overturn a trade just because they wouldn't do it themselves. No. That's a big no-no. All right. If it's collusion, you kill it. But I'll get questions about they have a trade that they're thinking about overturning, or they've already overturned it and they want to see what I think. And I'm like, no, that's a big fat no. So that's a common thing among commissioners. I get that a lot because some commissioners feel they need to micromanage and overmanage, you know, a league, and you don't have to do that. I mean, there's a moment in time where after you collect the dues, you select the draft order, you pick the keepers, there's a time to exhale. Relax.
Just let it go.
Let it go.
Let it go, like Frozen. Go.
Hey, drink your beer, right, and drink your beer, enjoy the season.
Yeah.
But there are some commissioners out there, they want to rule with the iron hand. And look, if you want to control something, go get certified as a referee and coach, you know, coach or, you know, referee youth soccer, right? You know, do that. Control that. But otherwise, leave the members in your league alone. Let them relax. Get your nose out of the situation and just have fun.
But we were talking about that earlier because you see a lot of the times later in the season, within like the last 3 or 4 weeks, when someone's out of the mix, they get convinced to give some kind of real bonus.
There's always somebody in that league.
There's always that one person who will give up like two fantasy studs for some kind of bench guy who's on the IR. Do you generally veto it yourself, or are you one of the commissioners who kind of puts it up to a league vote and lets everyone get their say?
No. I live on the planet where league members do not get the vote on trades.
Okay.
Okay.
Because generally what happens is, think about this, generally what happens is when a trade gets put up on the board, other members look at it, and they are not thinking about whether the trade helps those two people who are trying to do the trade. They are not thinking about how it helps the people who are trying to do the trade. They think about how it affects them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have nothing to do with it. It's not your trade. And it's not your job to go, well, why are they doing that? Why are they trading like that? I wouldn't trade Stephon Diggs. Well, you know what? I might hold Stephon Diggs at a higher value than you do. It's my trade. So no. Commissioners should oversee trades. And I know a lot of people have a hard time with that, but here's the deal. If you are in a league where you don't trust your commissioner, then things need to change. You need to leave, or something needs to change. You have to be able to trust your commissioner. And that's hard for people to hear, but that's their job. It's not their job to overmanage, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's their job to have things run smoothly, to keep things going. So you decide whether the trades are good or not. Look, if it's not collusion, you let it go.
Okay.
I mean, that's one of those topics that where people can go back and forth on. Well, if you are looking over the trades, who's looking over you? You know, I've had those discussions before, right? But you have to trust your commissioner. And so that's why, you know, when I'm trying to help people, you know, and like I said, I try and focus on the new commissioners. You need to set a precedent. You need to set the bar high. And if you start off, you know, putting everything in writing, trying to be transparent in everything you do, you can garner that trust so that you can have a league year after year after year, because I think that's what most people want.
You're absolutely,
all right, Reginald,
absolutely right, though. That is what people want. And
yeah,
we would love to talk to you as much more, but we have to go, unfortunately. But we will talk to you again very soon, Reginald.
Thanks for joining us, man.